Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network. Emotional, creative, and often comical. Welcome to another in-depth but out-of-the-ordinary look at what it's like to write. This is Writer's Block with Coin6 News anchor Jenny Hansen.
Okay, so on today's Writer's Block, we have Christopher Koch, and he is based in Reno and has a new book out with short stories. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, was I pronouncing your last name right?
You were.
Okay. The minute I said it, I thought, you know, it can be Coquet, maybe. So I'm sure you've gotten that during your lifetime. So you have this new book out. It's a bunch of short stories, and they look so interesting, the topics that you cover. And we'll talk about that in just a bit. But I first want to give our listeners just, you know, some information on your background. And did you grow up in Nevada?
No. I moved out here to take a job at the University of Nevada in Reno. I was born in Indiana and have lived a long time in both Indiana and Ohio.
Oh, Indiana and Ohio. Oh, that's right. Did you go to the Ohio State University?
Yes, as long as I will admit it, as long as everybody knows the article was not my doing.
Yeah.
I went to Ohio State University, and it's just fine to say it that way.
Yeah. The Ohio State. I know. Yes, it's a thing. So did you always want to be a writer growing up? Is this something that you knew you wanted to do?
Yes. Yeah. I'm lucky that it all worked out for me because I don't really have much else in the way of marketable skills. Mm-hmm. Pretty much from the moment I started hearing stories, I started making them up too. My mother's got a trunk full of stories I used to narrate to her about Godzilla and King Kong when I was a kid. And nice. I would insist on illustrating them and then having them stapled together. And I would show them to people. They were my books.
Yeah.
So I've spent a couple years here and there trying to get interested in other things when I was younger, but really writing and communicating that way was kind of it's all I've got.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that stuck with you. Yeah. And so then when you were at the Ohio State University, was that kind of what you were focused on then? Or did you think, oh, I've got to get a real job because, you know, you never know how the writing thing's going to pan out?
Yeah, I tried that before. As an undergraduate, I studied English education. Mm-hmm. I was going to be a high school teacher and did my student teaching at a little rural high school in Indiana. Liked it a lot and realized that I would never be creative to the extent that I wanted. So I went to grad school twice. I got an MA in creative writing at Miami of Ohio in Oxford, Ohio. And then a few years later, I went back and got my MFA at Ohio State.
Okay.
And I direct an MFA program now. So I guess I'm a cheerleader for MFA programs.
But yeah,
they're not for everyone, but they were certainly the right thing for me.
And so then when did you get, because so many people have trouble, you know, getting something published and just, you know, getting their foot into this industry. When did you first have success?
I got my first story published in 1999. It's hard to tell that story without telling another one. I was married at the time to somebody I had met at Miami University of Ohio, and she was very, very sick. She passed away in 1999 after a long struggle with bone cancer.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
And yeah, well, I mean, it's there's a lot of my work is sort of centered in that happening. Mm-hmm. And I had written and started submitting a story I really liked when she was kind of in her last days. So I found out I got my first story published while I was home from the hospital, changing my clothes, taking a quick shower. There was a message on the machine. And I had submitted that story to Ohio State's Literary Journal. I didn't know any of those people then. They were just up the street from my apartment. And the woman who called to tell me that my story had been accepted ended up being my thesis advisor at Ohio State. Hmm. The story came out and she kept in touch with me. She found out what was going on with my life. And, you know, in the very dark days after my first wife passed away, I started asking this person, Michelle Herman, if, you know, could I take a class as a member of the community? Could I come back and kind of get involved with a writing community? I really need that.
Yeah.
And she used that as an opportunity to recruit me to the program. So yeah, it was about a year and a half later that I started at Ohio State, and I wrote my first book there as a student.
Wow. Well, so you were kind of after that tragedy, it sounds like at least your writing career, that kind of formed things and set you off on that path.
Yeah, I was always able to write good sentences, but I think it's fair to say that I didn't really know what I was writing about until after that happened. Mm-hmm. And very much since then, the work that I've done has been looking at a lot of different things, but you know, grief, how people try to, you know, move on after a life-changing event. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you write what you know? And so there is like a little bit of you or your story and everything?
Yes and no. I'm not the world's most autobiographical writer. Mm-hmm. And anybody who reads my books, I would caution them about looking too much for me in them. On the other hand, yeah, you know, there are certain things that I feel like I know a lot better than other people might. Mm-hmm. Or that I can talk about in ways that I don't see talked about in other folks' fiction. But I also think it's the duty of a writer to try and get out of their own head every once in a while, too. Yes. I don't really think that we're all destined to stay, you know, in a very narrow lane. That's a complicated thing to say. You know, I read writing all the time by people who've gotten out of a lane and crashed immediately. But, you know, that's always my challenge, right? To talk about the things and the emotions and the themes that are important to me, but to try and find other people in the stories that those things can happen to. Mm-hmm. I don't want to stare into my own navel for all of my career. I don't think anybody would like to read that either.
Well, and because it's you yourself, I mean, I think most people would probably say that too about themselves. And you have you have novels. You also have a bunch of short story collections.
Not a bunch. I'm a pretty slow writer, as it turns out. I've got three books now out in the world, counting the new one. My first collection, We're in Trouble, was pretty much my master's thesis at Ohio State. And that's a story collection. Several years later, I wrote my only novel to date, one called You Came Back. You Came Back is a fine book, and I would urge all of your listeners to buy it. But, you know, it's one that I had to work pretty hard for.
Yeah. It had good reviews.
Yeah, it did. I think people other than me liked it more than I did. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on something now that is probably going to be a novel. Mm-hmm. But the way I'm tricking myself into getting it done is to write it as a series of short stories that are interconnected.
So would you say that you find, it sounds like you're saying writing a novel is more challenging for you than the shorter stories?
Yeah, it is. I don't know if it's something clinical about my attention span or what, but the short story is really where I feel like I can do, you know, great things. Short stories are not as popular as novels, and that's something that I've had sad talks with my agent about. But I love short stories. Probably my favorite writer of all time is Alice Munro, the Canadian Nobel laureate. And she's produced stuff as good as anything else ever written in our language. And reading her short stories, they don't feel unsatisfying. They feel like very, very compressed novels.
Right.
And that's something that I aspire to as well. My short stories are fairly long. You know, I do give myself a little bit of room to spread out, and I try to take on very complicated things. They're short enough that they can be polished really well too. Novels are very messy, and you know, there's something in me that doesn't like the messiness of the novel. It makes me a little nutty.
A little nutty, yeah. Well, I was going to say that I like to picture things when I read it in my head, like if it were playing out on TV or a movie. And I do like, you know, Netflix has come out with some series where each episode is totally different from the next, and they're like little short stories. Like they had the one that Tina Fey was in one of them. I can't think of the name of it. It was a love based series, but yeah. So that's, you know, it looks like some of these like the book that you just had come out, you would have told me not to, if I can speak, a collection of stories that are kind of related but not really. I mean, they're all separate. So talk about that, and just that it sounds like there's some heavy stuff in here and some really interesting insights on relationships.
Well, I hope so. You know, heavy stuff is probably accurate, but I also, you know, I went to great pains to make all the stories really suspenseful too. Mm-hmm. You know, another writer who is deeply, you know, in really in my DNA is Stephen King.
Yeah.
I was a genre reader as a kid, and I still am a genre reader. I learned a lot about storytelling from him. And I'm not going to say that my writing is as good as either Stephen King's or Alice Munro's, but I think, you know, people who pick up one of my short stories, I did try to get them a reason to turn pages. All of that said, yeah, they're stories that are all kind of circling a few central themes. Another thing that I've been kind of wrestling with my whole life is masculinity. You know, I grew up in the cornfields of Indiana. My dad was a smart guy, but a laborer, and also an alcoholic and a really abusive fellow to my mom. Mm. And, you know, so I grew up a kid with artistic pretensions, you know, surrounded by a community that didn't really value those very much.
Right.
And we had a very different sort of picture about, you know, what a man was going to be like. And I didn't much like the image of, you know, manhood that my dad was displaying for me.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that I've grown up a perfect angel, right? It's been a struggle for me, as it is for a lot of men, to kind of figure out, you know, who do we want to be and who does the world want us to be? So, I mean, some of that thinking is in everything that I've ever written. The protagonist of my novel is a not very good guy. And one of the things that happens in that book is him having to kind of come to an understanding of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was writing the stories for this book, not even knowing that they were going to end up in a book together, you know, the Me Too movement became very prominent.
Right.
A lot of what I thought I knew about the way people treated each other, you know, I had to readjust my thinking about that. I had to go back and look at my own behaviors and how I've been as a partner and a teacher and, you know, a person who occasionally has a microphone to speak into.
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking a lot about plots where people have to come to terms with screwing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do we do with the damage that we know we've done to other people? You know, how, and originally when I wrote the book, all the stories were centered around male protagonists. Mm-hmm. There's a novella that closes the book called Big Guy, and the book was called Big Guy. And when we placed the book with Delphinium, my new publisher, the editor there, Joe Olshan, who's a novelist, he and I talked about it a lot. And he had me rewrite two of the story, or drop two of the stories and put two new ones in. And the book that's now there has three stories that, with women at their center.
Mm.
And, you know, so it's not just about, like, you know, men navel gazing, but it's also kind of a more complex book about, you know, the damage that can happen, you know, in relationships, in marriages, in chance encounters that we have with people when we're younger.
Mm-hmm.
The novella Big Guy is about a man who, again, not totally autobiographical, but he's kind of an alternate reality version of me, the guy who became a high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And in the wake of a divorce, he decides that the problem with him is that he needs to lose a lot of weight. He's obese and he decides to lose 100 pounds. And that seems to be a positive thing for him, but it turns out to be, mild spoiler, that's not his problem. There are other things going on with him, and losing weight brings them to the fore.
Right.
Yeah, the way he treats people and, you know, the reasons that he wants to have the body that he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I know that it says that, you know, it kind of showcases masculinity in a lot of these stories, that it's most toxic and misguided. So that it definitely interesting themes. Is it easier for you? I would think it would be to write when the man is the protagonist. I mean, had you ever written where the woman was the main character?
Yeah, I have. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of my former classmates from writing workshops can remember times when I didn't get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, in some ways it's harder to write certain men, mm-hmm. if only because there are things about those characters I don't want to look at directly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm remarried and, you know, very nearly got divorced a few years ago, in no small part because of my own behavior. Mm-hmm. And so some of these stories are a chance for me to look at that too.
Mm-hmm.
And try to be clear-eyed about, you know, the things that I've been wrong about and the things that I've failed at. And again, you know, I've buried those things in the book pretty deeply, and have characters, you know, go through different sorts of problems. But some of the stories in there, the novella in particular, was a hard one for me to finish. You know, I'm a large human being, sometimes larger than at other times. I've gained and lost a lot of weight in my life. And, you know, that was a book that that narrator is probably closer to me than a lot of others. And that made it much harder for me to go and sit that behind deep. His audience.
Yeah. Is it hard for your family, like say your wife, to read? So, do they read it with this, like, you know, wait, is this me you're talking about? Or is it that obvious that, it, you know, some of these things were inspirations from your own experiences?
Yeah, we, you know, one of the harder things to do is to show my wife a book that I've been working on. Mm-hmm. She is an avid reader and doesn't always love the type of writing that I do, you know, and we've gotten over that a while ago. So I don't feel like I have to show her stuff as I'm doing it. But I did, you know, show her the book before it went, you know, out into the world. And I showed it to some other people too. And, you know, people who I know have had lives kind of like the ones that I've, you know, that I've demonstrated in the book. Mm-hmm. There's a story. One of the last ones I wrote for the book is from the perspective of a woman who has an abusive marriage in her past. And she ends up running into her ex-husband when she thinks she won't. And he seems to be reformed and is getting remarried. And she doesn't necessarily trust that. And she's trying to decide whether or not to reach out to the woman that he's going to marry. And I know a great many people who've been in those sorts of relationships, starting with my mom, and also a lot of friend of people as well. And, you know, both to ask for advice, you know, about how to portray certain things, but also just to make sure, like, if there's anything in here you've told me that I've forgotten that you told me and I'm now making use of that you don't like. But, you know, that's what I think a lot of writers do. I don't know that everybody does that, but I think a lot of us do.
That seems like a smart thing to do.
Yeah, and it's a fear of mine. You know, we're all magpies. You know, everybody who, you know, like writers themselves tend not to lead very dramatic lives. So oftentimes we're listening to other people's stories with kind of an ear for what we can pick up and little psychological nuances here and there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's always a fear of mine that somebody's going to read a story and, you know, call me up. That's me.
Right. That's my mother. I don't like how you portrayed me. Yes.
Yeah. My mother's given me permission to write about just about anything I want, which is great of her. The last few months have been a series of me sending panicked emails to people like, hey, there's a scene in the book. And I just remembered that you told me about this 3 years ago while we were at dinner. Is it okay? My good friends are used to that by now.
Yeah, that's funny. And so you said you're working on a novel right now or something you think is going to become a novel?
Yeah. So the MFA program I direct here at the University of Nevada, Reno, is we're very open to people writing genre fiction. Mm-hmm. And it's a deep love of mine. And I've always wanted to try and write a fantasy novel. So that's what I'm trying right now. Mm-hmm. it may or may not work. So I don't want to get anybody's hopes up too much if there are, you know, if anybody's inclined to. Because it's going to be weird and strange and I'm just telling myself it's unpublishable and I get to do whatever I want.
Right. Well, it's fantasy. Yeah, it's supposed to be weird and strange, right?
It is. But it's not going to be typical genre fantasy. I'm trying really hard to do something a little bit different and to wrestle with some of the things that my students here are wrestling with. I feel like at this point, I'm almost 50 years old. I've trained my entire life to write a fantasy novel. I ought to be able to do it.
Yeah. So, well, and especially during a pandemic, right? You got to escape somehow and try something new. How has that been? I've been asking writers and authors that, you know, how that's been going. Do you feel more productive with some of the downtime that you might be having or not so much?
No. I had a bunch of stuff that I was poking at here and there, not just the novel, but new stories. And a lot of those stories are set in, you know, some version of the real world. And those have been hard going. The real world is changing so rapidly right now that everything I put on the page feels immediately dated. You know, the new collection, I thought it was really timely right up until, you know, we're all locked down for quarantine and, you know, we basically entered a you know, sort of second, you know, major period of civil rights conflict in this country. Mm-hmm. So,
but all the things you wrote about, I mean, they're still going to happen and they're still, you know, timely, yeah. I think.
Well, I think so too. But yeah, it's anybody who's trying to, you know, write the world as it is these days, we have our hands full. I talk to my students about that a lot as well. You know, they're all wondering whether the theses that they're working on are still relevant. And, you know, they are, but it's hard to drag myself away from the news every day and, you know, to try and figure out, you know, what, if anything, I might say to the world that the world would find useful.
Oh, but you know, I think people are looking for escape. I don't know that, maybe because I work in the news, I don't know that I want to read about a pandemic right now. You know, I mean, reading about something else is probably would be a nice break for sure.
I mean, everybody I know is reading Station 11, you know, and I can't bring myself to do it. Mm-hmm. I hear it's a great book. That's not a knock against it at all, but I don't. You know, I don't want to read that book anymore than I want to go back and reread Stephen King's The Stand.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's weird times for sure. Have you been back at school at all, or has it been all Zoom based for now?
My school is at least pretending that it's going to do hybrid instruction in the fall.
Okay.
But I have gotten approved to teach online. Nice. I don't want to be party to that. As it happens, I'm changing offices at school just this week, and it feels really strange to go and prepare a workspace that I might not be able to use for another year.
Mm-hmm.
And to go and visit the campus that I love very much and to wear a mask and not see anybody else there.
Yeah, different times for sure. But I mean, you know, this is something that would be writing, I would think would be easier to teach online than maybe some other subjects. So that's at least there's that.
We're trying. Yeah. We're trying.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. And so if people want to pick up your latest book, which is a series of stories, short stories, you would have told me not to. Can they find that Amazon? I mean, pretty much anywhere where you can find books?
Pretty much anywhere. I'm a big proponent of independent bookstores. Mm-hmm. So if you go to my website, christophercoke.info, you can find a couple of links there. The bookstore here in Reno, Nevada is Sundance Books and Music, which is a terrific indie bookstore. And if you order from them, you can leave a note for me and I can stop by every once in a while and personalize and sign copies.
Oh, so, I love that.
Yeah. You know, I'm happy to do that for as long as people are interested in buying.
Okay. Well, Christopher Koch, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Stay safe.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.